past the creaky metal gates, through the fog-enveloped graveyard, you find yourself on the rickety old porch of a long-forgotten home. Beyond the threshold sits a man, obsessed, a tortured soul, cursed to discover all about the Southern California haunt community and beyond. You have now entered the domain of The Creepcast with Rick Creeper.
All right, guys, we're back at it. The Creepcast podcast with Rick Creeper 11. I have a very special guest, a good friend of mine, a fellow haunter, Teresa McCobb, special effect makeup artist. See, I already messed it up. And haunter from the Sanctum Horror via Mesa, Arizona. But you're here local in Southern California, correct?
Yes, San Diego based normally.
There we go. So how's it been? Haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a very long couple of months blended together. Right? I think we're all in the same boat.
Right.
So, I know. I feel like it's weird because you refer to last year and you're like, oh, I really mean 2019.
Right. I think the last time we saw each other, so we definitely saw each other at, I want to say Midsummer Scream in 2019, I believe. No.
Yeah, I think we, well, I know I visited you one year when you were working at Sinister Point.
That was funny because you and the hubby turned the corner and I was like in mid-performance and I'm like, okay, let me put my monster face on. And I tried to say something. I just started laughing. I covered my face and you guys are like, oh, that's okay. It's okay. It's like my first year. I'm like, oh my God, they're vets. I look like such an idiot. I was so embarrassed, but then at the same time, I was happy to see you guys. Like, I think I turned the corner. I'm like, oh, there they are. And I was just like, hey, what do you, I'm like, oh, I just broke character, started cracking up.
Yeah. No, it was fun. We hadn't been to that one. So you gave us a good excuse to drive up and check it out.
I couldn't contain myself. So yeah. So besides being a scare actor and a special effect makeup artist, you've done various cosplays, different monsters, which some of them are creepy as hell. Jeez. So, I'm sorry, but I don't know what it is. Some of the female actors, just haunters, when they do makeup, I don't know what it is, it just creeps me out. You do some ones that are very witchy looking or just kind of like a succubus witch, and they're just, I'm like, oh God, those are disgusting, but I love it. I mean, not only into haunt, but you're into Renfair, which we're gonna geek out on. And I never knew this, but you do Viking reenactments as well.
Yes, I have. It's like total spectrums, Halloween Horror Nut, and then I'm with a group called Vikings of Solheim, and we're a Southern California-based Viking, like, living history group, reenactment group.
So it's actual, like, historical reenactments then?
Yeah, so we do, we try to have more period-accurate clothing, and we all have, like, my friend Brian, who put it all together, he's a fantastic, like, leather worker. We have guys who are amazing, like woodworkers. So we all come together and kind of throw our different talents and make actual period accurate camps and whatnot.
Sign me up. Oh my God.
So much fun.
I got the Renfair bug in 2019. We're going to talk about that. Also, you're into something I'm into. We're definitely into Dungeons and Dragons, little geeky RPG roleplay games as well. So we're going to talk about that. So you have 11 years of experience under your belt working haunts, correct?
Yes.
How did you end up in the industry, first of all?
So, Halloween's always been a huge thing, so I can't say I'm too shocked. I should have known when I was a kid. My first taste of it really was thanks to my dad. He used to decorate, him and my mom would decorate the front yard super all done up at the beginning of the month. My dad would put this, giant dummy sitting on a chair with a mask on in our front of our house. So he'd have this dummy out there all month. Then Halloween night, he'd switch it with himself.
No, he would set up the gag.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So everyone got used to seeing this dummy with this creepy mask on all month. And Halloween night, he'd switch it with him. And he always had the chair opposite of where the front door was. So anytime the kids were knocking to get candy from my mom, my dad would like stand up, and my dad's like 6'7".
I love that.
So that's scared the crap
that's,
out of
that's
all these
the greatest
kids.
Gag. I love that.
Yeah. So that was the first taste. And then we always made homemade costumes, always wanted to look as good as possible with makeup and stuff. So I was into makeup just for fun. And then one of my exes used to work at the San Diego Haunted Trail. So when we were together, he asked if I wanted to check it out. They're working at an actual haunt. So okay. I volunteered for their.
Was that your first haunt experience working the haunted trails in San Diego?
Yep. So I just volunteered there.
I've never been. How is that place?
That one I had fun with because I feel like sometimes with certain indoor haunts, you get kind of pushed through really quickly, or it feels like you're really in and out. But I like Haunted Trail because they stretch it out. So it's outside of Balboa Park, which is just a really cool park to go to in general.
Okay.
And I think they say it's like a mile long stretch because they really have different setups and different rooms, and you're kind of walking through the park in between.
I like that because they're able to use the environment. So it's like if you want to do some type of, like, I don't know, hillbilly theme, or you're out in the woods, it's just the ambiance is created not in like a sound stage or like, you know, haunt walls. You're actually using the outdoor environment. It can be cold out, it can be eerie. That's why I personally like the Los Angeles Haunted Hayride, because they incorporate, you know, the park, and then it just and then you build these massive facades, and the fact that you said they stretch it throughout a mile, that's insane. I mean,
yeah. I know it feels like it after work when you're like, especially if you're on one of the rolls where you run up and down, make sure people have water and like replace like cover for people so they can take a quick break or whatever. Yeah. Like running up and down that thing, you're like, you feel it when you stop moving with your feet. No, it was fun, but yeah, that was my first taste of it, and then I didn't do it for a few years, and then I eventually ended up at Sanctum of Horror, and that's where I've been ever since.
So for those at home don't know what the Sanctum of Horror is, what can you tell us about it?
So Sanctum of Horror is, I guess the full name is Sanctum of Horror Haunted Attractions now, because we have two mazes. We have the one that is called Sanctum of Horror, which was a start, and it was actually originally a home haunt.
Really?
And yeah, it started just for love of Halloween and scaring people. They would do it out of their garage in the front, like side yard into the backyard. Hmm. And it got so big that they were like, you know what, let's try going pro with it.
So they started this at home, and it got to a point that the demand just, and then it went from someone's house to an actual location then.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And I got to join in the last year. It was a home haunt because it's funny how I ended up with them. It turned out being my like extended cousins who I never known existed up until like the year I went out there for Halloween. My parents met them at like a random like family reunion get together kind of thing.
That's insane.
Yeah. And they were talking about how they did this home haunt, and they were like, oh my God, our daughter's as weird as you. So they came back from this thing and they told me, like, Teresa, you have to meet these, your cousins, like
your cousins are creep like you.
Yeah, they're like, they're your same level of weird and crazy, and you're just gonna love it. So
what were the odds? Wow.
I know. So that's why when people ask, they're like, why do you live in San Diego but make the trek to Phoenix or Mesa for Halloween? I'm like, well, it's family. I'd not only do I get to do something that I love to do, but I get to help.
If I had a family member that had a haunt, same scenario as you, I would do the same thing. It's like, dude, I get to work with family and do something I love. It's like I was dumbfounded just doing it and being new. And I'm like, and people were complaining about this, complaining about, I'm like, dude, this is fun. And we getting paid to do this. I'm like, I get to run around like a goon and act like an animal and scare people. I mean, within, you know, certain parameters.
It's like therapy.
It's therapy.
A bad day.
It's like a bad day. I'm like, I'm going to take it out on people to an extent. You know, I get that, you know, I get the role play, which I did, you know, a million times when I was a kid, you know, just like daydreaming or playing Dungeons and Dragons or writing short stories and so forth. It's like, that's insane. So did you experience the Sanctum of Horror first as a guest, or did you try to work at there first? What was your first experience?
My first experience was behind the scenes. Because they basically asked me to come out to help them because they heard that I had done makeup and that I had worked a little at Haunted Trails. And they initially asked if I was interested in helping teach their girls makeup techniques that I had been using for myself for Haunt's previous years. So I first came out, spent a couple hours before they started, because since it was their last year as a home haunt, they were only open for Halloween weekend.
Okay.
So we just went out for the weekend, and I taught them some of the techniques I used, then also dressed myself up and helped work in the living room, which was the first room that you would walk in, which was in their garage at the time.
What was your character, your very first experience? What was your character? What do you remember?
Mine was so last minute. It wasn't even, back then we didn't even have like super set roles, just different random makeups based on whatever wounds you ended up having, or we'd figure out last minute what room you're in. So since I was kind of an afterthought, since I was focused on just doing
everyone all painted up, I get it.
That's a lot of my makeups end up being afterthoughts for myself. But I had like bandages across my eyes, so you couldn't see my eyes at all, but I could see out of them fine. Oh, wow. And then I have I'm sure you've seen some of my pictures. I have these veneers with like really thin, sharp teeth.
You have, I'm sorry, you have some disgusting monsters or characters that you bring to life. It just, it's always like the big grin with the teeth and like the blackout in the mouth. They were just like, it's always like some kind of like sea looking hag. And I'm just like, oh, that is gross. I if I saw you, even though I knew it was you, in a maze, I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'll just probably keep going. It's like, there's the one you have where you're holding, I think it was the skull of, like, I don't know, some type of cattle or goat or whatever. And you look like a witch, and your eyes are, I think you had just a white foundation with black running down from your eyes. And you're just standing there. And this, it was the one that I think you said a cousin built the facade. It was a photo shoot.
Yes.
And you just look something out of like a horror movie that was like, you know, maybe colonial like America, or like, you know, just Victorian London, just like this witch in her in an old home. And I'm like, if I saw that just standing there, I'd keep fucking moving. I was like, I love your makeup. At the same time, I can't, this is, it gives me the willies. So I'm just saying, no, thank you. It's just,
that's the best compliment to get. I like to do makeups that make people uncomfortable or unsettled, where, because sometimes it's fun to do the super blood and guts, and I like doing infected looks, but sometimes I do like doing like the, just, you can't quite pinpoint it, but something's off and you don't like it.
Another thing that I hated, but I love that you did, was you did two different variations of clowns, and you did the one clown that was at home in front of your fireplace. And you color coordinated the traditional orange and black with the clown costume, and also with your decor on the wall. Creepy fucking clown. I'm just like, okay, a female actor, scare actor, which I can't, they always get me. They pick up on the vibe. The dudes never get me. I'm like, hey, whatever. It's always the women that get me. And then you did a clown as well. I'm like, that's like just a double hybrid that I'm going to run from. And then you did another clown that looked like just you were zombified. And I was just like, no, that's just creepy as hell. No, thank you. It's like, I love it, but then at the same time, I hate it as well. So,
yeah, and those are my only, because we don't have, spoiler for those who don't go through our haunt, we don't have clowns in our haunt. So, I had never, I'm never a clown when it comes to acting. I've never been one, but for doing makeups, they're kind of fun to mess around with. And the one I did this year for Halloween was fun, because that dunce cap that I had on,
I love it.
That was from Missy, who does MM Fabrications. Her headpieces are my favorite freaking things. I have three of hers, and I hope to add more, but that was me trying to do justice to that piece. And I think it worked out pretty well, the makeups with it.
Now, at the Sanctum of Horror, the haunted attraction, normally is it the same theme every year, or is it different variations throughout the years?
With this one, the thing that's kind of fun with it is they actually have a similar theme. They just, we have two mazes, and both mazes actually have a story to both of them.
Really?
So okay. Instead of it being each room you're in a totally different theme or vibe, they have a story okay. that you kind of follow through the whole haunt.
And does the story grow throughout the years? Or is it like grow every year, or is it the same things repeating a little bit added at a time? Or
it's kind of a mix of both. It's depending on the focus.
Okay.
So it's definitely over the years as we've grown, we've been able to expand, because we first started with Sanctum of Horror, which you follow the story of a girl named Lenore.
Okay.
And you go through finding out like she murdered her family and gets put away and stuff like that. But I don't want to go too into the details if anyone does want to have the fun of going into it. But okay. It started in the haunt was basically just the house. But now we've expanded it to where you go through Lenore's home, and then you do get to go through into an asylum, and like there's all these different complete changes that you go through. And Sean, my cousin, who's the owner, like he's the one who did that backdrop in the promo shots. You like the stuff that man makes out of freaking cardboard or foam and just paints or distresses, like for being our haunt's technically outside in a parking lot, so it's a challenge to fully immerse people to forget you're in a parking lot in Arizona.
Those are the best haunts where you lose yourself, like you forget you're on a soundstage or a back lot somewhere.
Yeah.
or there's a roller coaster overhead. You're just like, you get so immersed, or you're so the set's so elaborate, or the actors who sell the sets are just very detail oriented, or they captivate you.
Yeah. And that's what I love, because when you go through these both mazes, like I notice this now when I go through other haunts, sometimes you'll notice places where they have like black walls with nothing there, or like really blank areas. So you're like, okay, obviously the scare is going to be coming from somewhere where this is all set up, but like everywhere you look in every room, there is something to look at. And there's, yeah, it's a feast. We're really boring to go through haunts because we walk extra slow and just eyeball every corner and every detail to admire what people do.
I take my time. I look at every intricate detail. I'm like, oh my God, they did foam here. They distressed that. Look at this. Look at that. And I love how, for example, like certain haunts they'll set up the scare, but you don't know what side it's coming from. So you'll have the actor kind of hanging out, getting your attention. And then there's the prop, you know, the prop gag that drops, like the window drop with like in a picture frame, and that's how they get you. Or it's a water gag or an air cannon. It's just, I love that because I love sets. I love the set design. I love the details. Also, I love the actors, but it's like you go in a room and it's kind of like sensory overload. There's so much to look at. Not only like the sights, the sounds, but like the smell, then the soundscape. I love scores and soundscapes, and you're just like, everything's going on at once. You're like, oh my God. And that's just the perfect, just recipe in that environment. It's like, okay, so you're not going to expect this, you know, 4-foot woman to jump out and scare the shit out of me. And that's when I take off running. It's like, they get me every time in Knots. They get me every single time. I don't know if they see it in like my face, or like, oh, this guy's a big fucking chicken. It's like, just, they got me every time. I walked in and I made a face. I'm like, oh my God. And they all picked up on it and attacked me. It's funny.
Yeah, you can sense them. I think you'd probably like the second maze that we have is called Breach.
Okay.
And the easiest, sorry Sean if I'm saying this wrong, but the easiest way I explain it to people is, to me it feels like kind of being in The Thing, but instead of aliens it's like a parasitic creature.
Great movie, by the way.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal movie. Mm. And that's the vibes I get out of it, because you're in like a military bunker trying to get through it and get out.
That is so cool. That just sign me up. I would work in it. Just let me work it. It just saying that I'd want to go through every night too as well.
Totally can. And the best part is after Halloween, the weekend after, however the month lays out, we'll do a lights out event where we combine both mazes into one giant maze. Uh-huh. And we take out all the lights. And instead of you... Like, I know a lot of places do the lights out events and they'll give you like a glow stick or something mm-hmm. to start off with. what's fun with ours is you don't get to go in with anything. You have to find your candle once you go in there.
That is horrible.
You start in the pitch black. It's beautiful.
I remember you told me, this was a while ago when we first met, you told me that you guys did your lights out at an event. And you, I think I saw one of the pictures of the monsters you played. And it, I think what you said, you came up from the ground or you were crawling. I forget. You told me something and you were like, that's the monster I do for the lights out. I'm like, fuck that. Like, it just, I think you had the whiteout contacts and you had a lot of heavy makeup on your arms and you were extending your arms out like up towards people. And you had jagged teeth. I saw that picture. I'm like, if I saw that in the light out maze, I'd probably go out the opposite way, go out the entrance. So I was like, no, I'm good. I'll wait for you guys once you're done. It's just like, people don't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. I was going to say the fun of Lights Out is it's kind of a treat for all our actors, too, because since we do have a story, a lot of the actors end up playing like a certain rotation of different rooms.
Okay.
So doing the Lights Out thing, there's no story because you're walking in the dark. So that's kind of our fun free for all where everyone kind of gets to go crazy and have fun. Being in different areas or saying different lines that they normally wouldn't say, and that's you get cool. To totally change personas because it is fun when people can't see you, because not only is it pitch black, but we do pump a lot of fog, so like their little taper candle lights are just beacons for us to know exactly where you are.
So you see, you're in between drinking water or like taking like a cough, a throat lozenge, and you're like, you just see this LED candle. It's like, it's not helping the guests, but it's helping the scare actors. I love that because it's
it just makes our life easier. And because sometimes, like, I've bumped into a few actors because I'll forget where they're hiding or when I'm trying to, like, run through rooms to make sure people have water and stuff like that. But I think my favorite was last year because it's this for patrons, it's just this terrifying scenario being in the dark with all these creatures coming for you, and then you have us in the background, me and a couple of the girls in the room we'd work with. We started joking around and saying a quote from Dexter's Laboratory in creepy voices, so we would know it's another actor walking through to not to prep a scare.
Not to scare
so them. We would say, I don't know if you ever watched Dexter's Lab on Cartoon Network, but he'd say omelette du fromage, just cheese omelette. So like, so it'd be dead quiet and you see someone walk by and be like, omelette du fromage.
And so that was the cue to like, okay, that's another actor. It's like,
yeah, like, don't worry, don't freak out, no one's sneaking in, it's just another actor running through. But
I never thought about that. That's a great way for you to know that the guests are coming through. So you see the LED candle just, you know, coming through the fog, you're like, oh my god, this is the perfect setup. That is creepy. It's just, I admit I'm the biggest chicken, and I've been invited to go to the 17th Door here in, you know, Fullerton, California, and I know a few people that work there, but I don't like the touchy-feely, I won't go through it. And I think the fact they know that I don't like that, I probably get messed with more. I love the guys that work there. Christian's one of them, actually. He plays the character Mad Dog, and he's, when are you gonna come by? I'm like, never. It's just, it's like, love you, Christian, but we can hang out outside of Haunt. I love the fact that you guys have that. It's the candles. You can see them coming, because I would always depend on like an audio cue, and or like you hear the guest. And I love it because I'm hiding and I hear like, you know, like, oh my god, Justin, where which way are we going? I'm like, okay, one of them's named Justin. So I jump out and I'm like, where are you going, Justin? And he's like, how did he know my name? And I'm like, you just said it. But I'm thinking that to myself. I'm like, where's Justin at? And they all point at him. What's this? They're like, oh my god, Teresa. I'm like, where are you going, Teresa? And they're like, oh.
That's my favorite, is when you hear the names. And I'm like, that's the worst thing you can do. But that's
the worst thing. I love it. And I'll just like, they're like, I don't like the one, they're really tall. I'm like, well, guess what? I'm 6'4". Here I come. So normally, how do you, like, before scaring, would you have like a ritual to get ready? Like, how do you find inspo? Are you listening to certain music? Do you like have to like do certain things? I know for me, it was always like a certain song, which I would harmonize my voice just in hum, or I had like a playlist of certain music, or I had to do certain things. Like, I'm like, okay, you know, let me get the character, let me stretch. I drink a certain amount of water. What do you normally do to like prepare to get into character as far as scare acting?
Oof, I'm kind of all over the place because I do have like a variety of different playlists that I do usually play during haunt season that does get me amped up, and different styles of music depending, because I have like, I'm a sucker for like the old 30s and 40s Halloween music.
Oh, trust me. Yeah.
And then but then I'll go from like more twisted, like I love Harley Poe and other, I can't even think when I'm trying to name things off the top of my head, but I'll just go through a variety of different music. But my kind of setup thing is when I first get to the haunt, like we get there a couple of hours before it opens, and since my main job is doing makeup first, I don't usually, unless we have a night where we're kind of low on actors, I don't often end up playing like a static part.
Okay.
Because my job is to make sure if there's any late actors, they can get all made up.
Got it.
And put in their rooms. So my kind of ritual is once everyone else is done up, I'm kind of the last one left in the makeup trailer. And that's when I can put on my music quietly, because by that time the haunt's getting ready to open. So I'll just be in my zone. And I end up just going with whatever kind of pops in my head of like, oh, do we want to go with this kind of look tonight with cymbals and do the more kind of like forest witch kind of vibe, or do we want to go with a more infected look to kind of go with more of what's going on in Breach? Then my final thing is I always take, I call them my dirty makeup room selfies, because we have little cheap like floor length mirrors that are just covered in blood and different chunks of makeup throughout the season. So I always take portraits of myself after I finish before going into the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my final piece to my makeup ritual. But I don't get into a certain headset. It's really once I get the makeup on and once I get into the zone, like as soon as I leave that makeup trailer, it's like a curtain goes up and it's like, bam, I'm suddenly someone else.
It's like showtime. I get it.
Yeah.
It's soon as you to me, it feels like it's a suit of armor, you know, putting the makeup on, you know, because I'm really reserved for people. I mean, for people that know me, I'll speak to them, I'll, you know, whatever, have conversations. But like, good example, I mean, I knew no one at Sister Point, so I just kept to myself. And I knew nobody, excuse me, at Dark Harbor. I kept to myself, and I'd be respectful. And people have a tendency to pick up like, oh, this guy doesn't want to talk to no one. He's standoffish. No, I don't know anybody. So I would go in my corner and get prepped. And to me, I felt took it as a job. I just, okay, lights on, lights off. It just, I had that mentality of like, you know, when I played sports or when I did, you know, construction or whatever, it's like, okay, you put on that hat and you have to wear that hat for X amount of hours. And once it's time to go home, you turn off the lights and you leave it there. But, God, I think about it, I'm like, I'm such an idiot. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? But then it was fun. And to me, the fact like you saw like the reactions of the guests, and to me that made me smile more. I'm like, if they're vibing this and they're having a blast, then I'm doing my part. And that made me smile to a point sometimes I would have to like look away and laugh, or I'd have to do like a maniacal laugh to cover my real laugh. I'm like,
yes,
ah.
That's
and I'm really laughing. I'm like, what are you looking at?
That is the hardest part still, because it's like, even after years of doing this, if you get like that one prime reaction, it's like, oh shit. Like, don't break character. So I do like roles when I can laugh maniacally to cover that, because it is so hard sometimes. Because there's been a few where I'm like, I almost just could not contain myself to break character with some people.
I just broke character. The best was like people that knew me, and they'd freak out, and I'm telling them like in my monster voice, I'm like, dude, you know who I am. I would always have to cover it up with like the big boisterous, like, you know, evil villain laugh, like over the top. But then I would do that on purpose because I'm really laughing. Or I'd go back to the area I was hiding, and I have to cover my mouth. I'm like geeking out. I'm like, you're such a fucking nerd. I'm like, oh my God. It's like, yeah, it's too much. It's too much fun.
It's a blast. I love it. That's why this past year felt weird, because we chose to play it safe and just skip last year with the pandemic and everything. Yeah. So it was really weird in October. I'm like, I have all this pent up energy because it's usually the time of year where I just go nuts. So it was definitely a unique. I'm probably gonna go insane this year.
Oh, I think everyone's foaming at the mouth this year. They're just like, just waiting to do. It's just like,
definitely.
I mean, I was able to have some experiences last year. I worked on my cousin's home haunt, which I apparently my character, it's like the staple of the story. It just it was fun, and there was sometimes he bought like this insane. And I'm going to share the story, even though they're going to come on the next episode. I'm going to share the story. He bought like this ridiculous, and it was great. Fog machine. It was like concert, like quality, like something Ozzy had on stage when he toured like in the 80s. He's like, check out this fog machine I got. And he got it from a guitar center. I'm like, dude, that's like what they use like on Ghost Town streets and Knots. And he put it right by me. And prior to that, it was just something you got like, you know, a smaller grade one, still good, but not as potent as this one. So my character is supposed to be like the caretaker, the grave digger of the property. So I'm in this one corner digging on the lawn, and he hits me with the fog machine. I'm like, I disappeared. It just like, you couldn't see me sometimes. I'm like, oh my God. And I loved it. And there was like an inside joke going amongst us and making fun of his younger brother, my younger cousin. And then they came up with it. There's a story behind the nickname. They called him Chips. And the story was because he was like working like the meet and greet table where he gave, you know, people like candy or whatever and they could donate. And so we had a photo op. So Adam, the younger brother, was supposed to take care of the photo op. And in character, I kept yelling at him, you know, to get off his ass and do the photo op. The poor kid, I mean, I he knows I was messing with him, but he was always eating chips, like cans of Pringles or bags. So there's three monsters. It's myself, Jeff, and Nick. And when we have like this cool photo op, and I'm like, get your ass up here, Michael. And I'm Adam. I'm like, get over here. And we're yelling at him. I'm like, take the photo op, do your job. So one of the monsters, they're all, come on, Chips, get off your ass, Chips, but in a British accent. And the name stuck. So from that point on throughout the haunt, we kept calling him Chips. And I was dying. Like I was cracking up. And so there was like a photographer there from one of like the big like YouTube channels, like Parks and Cons or someone. And they're like, can we get Chips in the photo op as well? And so they kept calling him Chips. I was crying as a monster crying. Luckily, the point of the story is this powerful fog machine. I was hiding in the fog with a fog machine and I was cracking up, like just dying. We can't see the grave digger. I'm all, no, it's okay. Don't worry about me. I'm like, I'm good. But the name stuck. So they made him a costume for the last week and he was there. And he was supposed to be like a newsboy from like the 40s or the 30s. So he had like the side satchel bag where the newspaper's at and they wrote Chips in Blood.
Awesome.
But the entire time the monsters kept calling him Chips and just giving him a hard time. It just, that was one of those cases I could not compose myself, but I kept laughing. Luckily the fog machine was hiding me cracking up. So.
Oh, see, that's what I love with the haunts. It's like, not only is it fun, it's especially when it's like friends or family, when it's people that you do get close with, because I'm lucky where my haunt is with actual family members, but then we also have people who have become our haunt family. So every year there seems to be some stupid inside joke that ends up happening throughout the haunt. And it's so hard because if it's one that involves a certain phrase or something done a certain way, like one of the jackasses will say it while we're in the middle of scaring someone and they'll be doing it in the other room in character. And it's like, oh, shut up. Like, don't make me laugh,
I'm gonna break character.
Yeah, it's so bad.
It was so much fun, and like I would like pretend I'm beating up on him, and people were like, oh my God. I had a prop like it looked like a plumber's wrench, like a monkey's wrench, and it looked real. I pull it out on people and they freak out. I'm pretending I'm hitting them and I'm like, do your job, Chips, and I'm hitting him with him, like I'm grabbing him by the neck and he's laughing and I'm poking him in the ribs, like, you know, pinching him. And he's like, why are you always beating up on me? That's supposed to be his voice. And just, but they turned him into a character, and the character's name was Chips. He had a mask, and it's just his bag said Chips. I was like, oh my God. So
that's fantastic. I hope Chips stay.
I think Chips is going to have his own spinoff, his own spinoff story, and it's going to be like a side maze maybe one day. Who knows? It's just
fantastic.
So, of all the monsters you played, of all the photo shoots I've seen, I mean, I've seen you do like zombies, the clowns, the various like, you know, witches and like, you know, just hags and all. What been your most memorable, your most favorite?
Oh man, that's rough. Gotta say, there's probably going to be a couple just because of a variety of like favorite how it looked versus like memories or nights that came with it. So probably one of my recent ensembles that I will be bringing with me this coming haunt season, since I didn't get to have it last year, is I just called it my Queen of the Undead makeup. So I had that zombie makeup with the big halo piece that I got from Missy. That thing I love, because that's one of those gets me in the mood. As soon as that thing's on, I'm like, oh, we're going to town now. I love being covered in blood.
Okay.
So anytime I'm in like a super bloody makeup,
just gory.
Oh, it just gets me super stoked. I'm like, I don't know if that's like something you should be proud of. Like, it's like such a mood booster of like, right. Yes. So I love being covered in blood, which that one also ties with doing zombies in general is a bloody one. But with San Diego Comic-Con, we used to do the San Diego Zombie Walk every year.
I remember that. I love that photo. It's gory. And it just, now, are you doing your makeup all entirely yourself, or someone's applying some of the prosthetics in two-dimensional three? It's 100% you, or it's someone's helping?
That's all me.
Really?
So I like to torture myself. So I make my own prosthetics. So I sculpt them out in clay, cast the molds, pour the silicone. So I've been messing with silicone. I haven't gotten into foam latex.
Have you ever done a live cast on yourself? Or had
no,
I don't know.
I would like to. I've been making just flat molds right now. That's when I need someone else to help me with that process.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't know if I could ever do a live cast because I might be claustrophobic. I'd love to, but first I would shave the beard probably. But I don't know if I could. I've heard some people have like bad experiences, but I heard some people are like, oh, they were fine. I'd hate to be that guy. I'm like, hey, can you take this off now? I know we did all this work. Like, I'd hate to be that guy. So. I never knew.
Yeah,
I knew you did. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I know you did majority of your makeup. I don't know. You did everything, the entire, like your own prosthetics, everything. You've applied everything on yourself. All the photos I've seen, like the zombie walks, the haunts. I mean, that's been you 100%.
That's all me. Yep.
That is insane. How do you, I can't even like, you know, shave my beard evenly in the mirror. It's like, how are you applying makeup? Wow.
The worst is when I do characters where I have like the mesh lenses.
Right.
Because I have to do I like to do a majority of the makeup while I can still fully see.
That makes sense.
So I'll try to save those towards the end. But the hardest is a few years ago, I dropped the money to get a really nice set of Scalera lenses that they weren't the whole blackout ones, but they were mesh ones that kind of gave the super bloodshot zombie eye effect. So not only was it my whole damn eye covered, but I was still partially blinded thanks to the mesh. So those were a pain in the ass because I would have to put them on a certain way in before I started fine-tuning all like the eye makeup. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice fun self-torturous process.
I'm gonna have to try those one day. I've been lucky enough to find contacts in my prescription, also just generics with Van Fang's official. But the Scalera's, I've been wanting to try a pair, but I have to wear contacts as it is, and I'm blind as a bat. So I had no idea that you were doing the makeup yourself. I knew you did the majority of it yourself, but like some like the zombie one is very intricate. And the prosthetics, you're making your own prosthetics. That is insane. So I'm thinking I want to take a quick little break, and then I want to come back and talk about your experience of doing makeup and how you started, or if you're formally trained, or just something you had a natural talent in as well. So we're going to take a quick little break. We'll come back. I'm here with Teresa McCobb. This is episode 16, Haunter, Scare Actor, Special Effect Makeup Artist from the Sanctum of Horror. Also, we're going to talk about your art and illustrations. You're an artist as well, and you have a store as well. And I'll put all the links in the description. You can find her and you can purchase her, her merch as well. So, this is episode 16. We'll be right back.
Don't you dare try to escape. The Creepcast with Rick Creeper shall return.
Once again, we're talking about zombie donuts, guys. Yes, zombie donuts in the beautiful city of downtown Fullerton, California. This is Rick Creeper from the podcast. If you guys haven't been, go check out Zombie Donuts. Gonzalez family's owned and operated Zombie Donuts since 2014. I've been a regular since. It's not, and it's beyond them to sponsor my podcast. I've been a supporter for them, God, since 2014, which I discovered on my own through my barber. I'm probably there 2-3 times a month, and I'm not gonna lie, I get 2 donuts and a coffee. Let's talk about the coffee. They got different variations of coffees, hot and cold. Different variations of donuts. They got standard donuts. They got horror themed donuts. My personal favorite is the Bleeding Heart and Death by Chocolate. They got some pretty bomb vegan donuts as well. Did you know they had merch too? Yeah, they got some pretty cool merch. So if you're looking for a cool present for a zombie or a donut lover, go check them out. The t-shirts, they're really, really good quality. They got their t-shirts from Tino Evil. You guys know Tino Evil? Same dudes that make t-shirts from Midsummer Scream. Where you been? Downtown Fullerton. Go check them out. Support a small business. Now's the time. Go splurge. Bring home a dozen for yourself. Take them to work. Do what you got to do. Anyways, go check him out. Instagram, Zombie Donuts. Check him out in Fullerton. Tell Rick Creeper from the Creepcast podcast sent you. Trust me, guys. You're going to dig the vibe. You're going to like the donuts. I personally like to go early, early morning. Just a little insider note. So take note of that. Zombie Donuts, Fullerton, California. Scope them out. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Where do you think you're going? There is no escape from the Creepcast with Rick Creeper.
Okay, guys, we're back at it. Episode 16 with my good friend Teresa McCobb, scare actor and special effect makeup artist from the Sanctum of Horror Haunt Attraction in Mesa, Arizona. I don't know why I said it like that. I thought it sounded cool, but... Also, you're an artist.
Works.
Yeah, it did. You're an artist too, and do you have a shop on? Where can we get your art?
Currently, I have the Big Cartel website. Okay. So it's not as big as Etsy, but I will send you the link. It's teresamacob.bigcartel.com.
Cool.
So I sell on there. I sell currently just prints and greeting cards of different pieces, and then I'm starting to branch out and doing like art pop-ups and vending events. And I've been making little, one of the new additions to in-person ones is I make terrariums out of bones I find while hiking and moss and stones. Yeah.
So cool.
I have no way of shipping those in one piece right now, so can't sell those online yet, but.
Something like that, you have to appreciate in person. So if like the pop-up events, I definitely see that. Also,
yeah, it decorates the desk too, or the table, so you're not just staring at,
just staring at
different types of paper.
Also, I'll put the link in the description of the podcast where they can find your art, they can find your profile, they can see how spooky you are with the Sanctum of Horror, and just creep out on you big time. So, what came first, the scare actor haunter/haunter or the makeup artist?
Makeup artist first, definitely.
So, why don't you tell me about that? I want to talk a little about your makeup.
That one again was stemmed from having cool parents who always made a big fuss out of Halloween. So, like I said, I'm super lucky. I never had a store-bought costume. My mom always made ours or thrifted ours, or we always tried to go nuts. So when I got to the age where I could start doing my own makeup, I loved watching all the old horror movies. Which is funny, my mom likes Halloween, but she can't do scary. So my dad and I would watch like the old Roger Corman or Vincent Price films.
Oh my God, Vincent
Price. We loved Vincent Price's. I love everything that man did.
He had the coolest hair too. You know.
Oh, yeah. Like knowing that voice is just, and especially all the Edgar Allan Poe ones that he did. Like I love them so much.
He's definitely inspiration on a... current project I'm working on with my good friend Emmanuel Manjavar, who is the voice of the podcast and voiceover artist, but he's a little inspiration. We're working on something.
Oh, yeah.
But I could totally relate. I think my dad turned me on to a lot of the movies he did, like Pit and the Pendulum, and like, you know, what else? The House on Haunted Hill, or just
that's one of my favorites.
I think it's the original. I have original artwork from that movie. I just have to get it framed, but
nice.
Something about that man's voice. Even like on it used to be. So for people that have iPhones, it's what is it? iTunes for music. For people that have Androids, it was Google Play Store. I typed in Vincent Price and just tons of stuff, just like old radio, like timey shows like Curse of the Black Cat, or, you know, Curse of this, Curse of that. And just tons of just, and him doing spoken word about like just witches spells or reading Poe. It just like, I loved it. I'm like, that's so I remember I asked you earlier what your one of your routines when you get ready for Haunt. I would do a lot of music, but then I would listen to a lot of like his like spoken word or just storytelling. Just the Price, just something about him. Even when I was a kid, I was like 8 years old, like obsessed with him. What kind of 8-year-old kid's obsessed with him in the '80s? It's just weird to me.
Hey, that's okay. I always joke with other kids. Like, I'll say when you're kids, like your parents would have you watch certain shows. I'm like, I got to watch X-Files with my dad, so like, I'm like,
love that show.
Doesn't help showing how I turned out.
Right. Blame dad for your spookiness, you know.
100%. We're also pretty sure he's an extraterrestrial from another planet anyway, so him and himself is a paranormal experience, so
that's too much.
But those movies, I love, of course, naturally, in my childhood, from third grade to sophomore year of high school, I lived in Pittsburgh, which is where you get George Romero and Tom Savini.
There you go.
And so I was surrounded by, I got to grow up next to one of the cemeteries where they shot parts of Night of the Living Dead. I wasn't too far from where they shot, like in the mall for Dawn of the Dead.
Wow.
So I grew up with loving horror. So when I got to actually get to the age where I could mess with it myself, I just started the way a lot of people do with makeup. Got the good old real cheapy liquid latex with tissue paper and started figuring out how to make cuts and the cheap store blood that would stain everything forever. And
right.
From there, I'm a perfectionist with myself and a super harsh critic. So it would be the, okay, this is all right, but you could do better. How can we do this better? Mm. So the tissue paper latex turned into buying store prosthetics and then seeing how they make those prosthetics. I'm like, okay, well, how can I make this blend better with me? And that's when I started getting into like sculpting my own wounds and molds, and it just kind of kept going from there. I'll pick a certain thing that I think I need to focus or improve on, and then I'll spend that year messing with it. So it was definitely makeup for fun, and that was me just trying to do, like most girl, or not most, but a lot of people for Halloween, especially women, will like to look really cool or like be a really gorgeous character, a sexy costume of this or whatever. And I was always the one who I'm like, I want to look fucking disgusting.
You're like, I want to be gory. And it's like,
I want to look gross.
Like,
and
I don't want to be a
hideous.
Sexy bumblebee. I want to be like the, you know, I want to be a ghoul. I totally get it.
I'm like, I like to look disgusting, and I don't know if I should be pleased or upset that it's that easy to make me look that gross. But I've mastered the art of making myself look disgusting, and I have fun with it. So that luckily helped turn into having a really awesome side job of doing effects.
You mentioned Tom Savini. Are there any other movies out there, like certain special makeup artists or movies that influence you as far as continue to develop your skill set?
My biggest makeup artist influence is Rick Baker.
Oh,
that
my
man,
God, yes.
Is
thank you. Weekend.
Amazing.
Weekend the episode now. Thank you. No, I'm just kidding. As soon as you said Rick Baker, I'm just like, yes.
Oh, God. He was the one from the get-go. And when I geek out about Rick, I'll have so many people like, who I'm like, you might not know his name, but you definitely know his freaking work. Because
what would be
your
most favorite or influential movie he has worked on?
So hard. Like, of cliche as it sounds, of course, a lot of our first intro is American Werewolf.
Thank you.
Thank you. That transformation scene.
And it just, oh. One of my favorite movies about lycanthropes. Excuse me, werewolves.
Yeah.
It just, the transformation, and for its time, you know, it's 1980, whatever it was. It just.
It still holds.
I for the longest time, I didn't know that he was doing the special effects for Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yep.
Up until recently, me and the girlfriend watched the making of him. I'm like, dude, that's Rick Baker. And he had the feathery parted Bee Gees hair from like 1985. I'm like, dude, that's Rick Baker. And then he also did makeup on himself. He came out in the actual video as a zombie, but I seen it a million times as a kid, but I had no idea that was all. Well, he was the lead makeup artist on and design for the Michael Jackson's Thriller. Just, American Werewolf of London, just that transformation scene. It just, amazing man. He's still creating art. He's still doing makeup, which is,
yeah, I know he like officially, I think he retired from doing actual films, but I follow him on Instagram and am forever awed. I even, showed my husband today. He posted for April 1st for Lon Chaney's birthday. He did a portrait of him in a day. Mm-hmm. And this portrait is massive. And I'm like, how is he so freaking talented? Like, this portrait he made within a single day is just would take me hours and days to complete. And what makes it 10 times better is I've had the privilege to have met him a couple times.
Really?
Yeah, he's the only person, like, famous person where I've actually gotten choked up. Uh-huh. Because I got to meet him and talk to him, and I tried to not be a complete loser, but I was like, you're inspired me to do all of this. And I got his autograph and I got a picture with him, and I kept it together really well. Uh-huh. But then, like, I think this is at Monster Palooza, and like 5 minutes after the whole exchange, I was walking away with my husband. I just start crying because I'm like, holy shit, I just met my childhood idol.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
And he was so nice and so sweet. So it makes it that much better because I'm like, I didn't think I could love and respect you any more than I already did. And to be that humble and just that cool of a dude, mm-hmm. for being amazing, like, oh, it was a great experience. I'm definitely honored that I got to at least meet him.
It's crazy because the area you grew up in, you had the influence from like film locations and people living in the area, and then you're influenced by Rick Baker and his movies and his art, and then you end up meeting the guy at a convention, Monster Palooza, and then it just comes full circle. The dude was super cool, and you're like, dude, you influenced me to do this. That's insane. The only person I ever got to meet that was kind of like a childhood, I'm just going to sound so dumb, a childhood hero was Ric Flair the Wrestler. And just asked him to chop me, and he did. Like, he has a famous, infamous chop, and when he does it, people go woo. And he did it to me, and I was like, to me, I almost cried. But I was just, two different stories, anyways. And this is a great segue for my next question. It's like, obviously you had an interest, which ended up being a raw talent. But were you formally or informally trained as far as makeup, or just something you just picked up on your own? Obviously,
all self-taught.
See, that's just to me, it's just drive, or you have a natural talent and then you take certain tools. It wasn't like you had the internet back then. You're going and picking up things you can at the store and just learning on your own little by little eventually.
Yeah, the past. Once I started doing like haunt work is when I got super serious with it. So I had, like you said, we didn't have as much on the internet when we first got into it, but you had like the old Tom Savini makeup books from like the 80s or I could be totally wrong when they came out. There's a couple older makeup books, and then I had anatomy books that I'd reference when I'd be trying to make like, what's it look like under this level of flesh? Like, okay. I would reference looking up the real thing. So I'm sure I had a really sketchy internet browsing history looking up certain wounds and stuff like that. But it was all self-taught. And then I was fortunate, thanks to doing different conventions, I ended up befriending this makeup artist and just general brilliant artist. Her name's Alana. She was on the first season of Face Off on Sci-Fi.
Oh, wow. Great show.
And I met her because she has a side company. She does these things called Rotten Roses. So they're these really pretty flowers that she makes herself. Like, she doesn't buy pre-made flowers. She buys just fake petals and arranges these flowers and puts like different teeth or creatures or things in them. And we started shooting the shit at a convention and just kept in touch. And she really helped me with getting tips on getting better with airbrushing, which is something I'm still really trying to get better at, and
okay.
help me with painting techniques, because she worked at Immortal Mask for a while too, so she has a she's super super talented with paintbrushing, and she's given me a lot of great pointers over the years, so I super respect and appreciate her coming into my life too.
It's just insane, the little time I've been in this world, you know, this mad world that we belong to. It's just it's a small industry, small world. Everyone knows each other somewhere. And it's the most humblest people I've ever met. I haven't had a, I guess, say maybe one or two bad experiences, but each his own. But
yeah,
I've had so many amazing experiences and just met so many cool people who have accepted who I am, including yourself and your hubby. And just we're all a bunch of nerds. We're all just a bunch of geeks that just are into like
yes.
being monsters and creating and want to do things or these outlets. And then it stems from like your childhood. I forgot about my creative side for years, and I just became a 9-to-5er, and just something sparked, and it just somehow I ended up in this world. And look at me now, I'm this buffoon with the podcast talking about, you know, the haunt community and makeup and monsters and so forth. I still don't know what the hell I'm doing. So that's insane. It's just the fact that you were self-taught. It grew over time out of passion, out of just drive, integrity, to a point you meet someone that was very inspirational to you. That's very commendable in my book. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
I feel like I'm sure I'd be a lot farther if I did have some professional schooling, but it's a journey. I'm having fun getting there.
It's like going to college. Some people go to college, don't learn a damn thing. And some people learn to trade for free. So there you go.
Hey, I originally went to college for media art and animation. And I really had a love of the idea of like stop motion animation, because I love that style and 2D. But when the school I was at, I didn't find out till after the fact that they really started shifting the focus on more of the 3D animation, which okay. My heart's not in that at all. So. Uh-huh. That's when I was like, okay, animation's the route it's going. It's not really a full-time job I would feel happy doing. So.
Well, you found an art. You found an art you're passionate yeah. about and you're good at. So sometimes, you know, one door hasn't opened for another one to close, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, that definitely helped booster the makeup, because I was so burnt out drawing for school. That's when I found out that I really have to have a love for it, because when it becomes a full-time, like, stress-inducing job, it kind of kills the passion. So after I finished with college, I didn't really have the urge to draw or paint as much, so that's when I started really focusing on doing the effects, because mm-hmm. it was a different style, and it was something new to really... That was when I first started getting more serious with learning the prosthetic side. Mm. So that's really what... Can I help boost that one?
Well, there you go. You know, it ultimately worked out at the end. So look at you now.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about some of your hobbies outside of haunt and some geeky stuff we have in common. So you're definitely into Ren Faire. Well, excuse me, Renaissance Faire for people that don't know. So how long you been involved in Ren Faire? How long have you always gone full on dressed up, or you were just kind of like, I like to use the word civilian, just from the distance, or out the gate where you were in the suit of armor out, you know, in full character, you know, at what level?
I'd say like 13, 14 years now.
Oh my gosh.
I always had fun, because I always liked folklore and history and stuff like that too. But I first got more serious into it, not through like regular Ren Faires, but there's the group called the SCA, mm-hmm. Who they host more like period accurate events okay. and campouts, and they're kind of all over. And in Southern California, you have down in San Diego, we have Potrero War, which is usually Memorial Day weekend. I think up more inland, close to the LA area, they have the Great Western War, which is in October usually. So I never get to go to that one because that's our chaos season. Uh-huh. But those ones are fun because they're like Ren fairs, but it's camping for several days. So we're usually there like 5 days. And
this is reenactments, correct?
Yeah. So instead of like at certain Ren fairs, you'll see like more choreographed fighting.
Okay.
At these things, you have groups that train year round and actually beat the shit out of each other in armor.
Sign me up.
And it's super fun. And then you just camp for several days. And at those events, if you're someone who stays, if you're in a group, like we have a camp group there of like at least 40 people. So when you stay the whole time, those you actually have to wear like period accurate stuff at night and stuff. So that's when I got more serious with like learning how to sew my own pieces. And by going through that stuff, the groups that we camp with there is more relaxed. Like we don't have a fighting group. Our buddies, we really go to have fun, wear medieval clothes, watch fights, buy stuff, day drink.
Like, drink, yes, drink. I'm not a big drinker, but I definitely drink at Ren Fair, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's like the one place where it's encouraged to take drinks from strangers because every camp has like their signature meal, like drinks that they make, and a lot of people bring their own homebrewed meads. And we know a pirate camp at that event that makes crazy rum concoctions that are always delicious. But through that, that's how I ended up getting into the current Viking group that I'm in, which we haven't gotten to do too terribly much because we did a few events in 2019 and then we had a ton of stuff planned for 2020 and that just did not happen. So,
and so what's the name of this Viking reenactment group do you belong to?
Vikings of Solheim.
And you guys get together where exactly?
We're kind of all over in Southern California. Okay. And if anyone is interested and would like to look into it, I know they have, we have an Instagram too. And I think they made a little like blog site that you can follow that's still getting worked on. But because there's a couple of us in San Diego. Several of them live in downtown LA. Okay. Some live up in the mountains near like Big Bear and stuff like that. So we're kind of all over the place and we'll do we'll kind of try to alternate different events. So we hit up all the different Ren fairs.
Cool.
And then during off season, we'll meet at each other's homes and stuff or do camping excursions.
I'll definitely put their Instagram and link in the description of the podcast. And so it's funny about Ren fair. I knew Ren fair as a kid forever, and he saw the commercials like on Channel 11, saw Renaissance Pleasure Fair, the one in Irwindale.
Yeah, that one's fun.
Well, look at these geeks. And I remember like in high school, but it piqued my interest because, you know, another thing I'm into, I was into, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, D&D, and I was like, well, this is fantasy lords, you know, I like history and so forth. So a good friend of mine who I met at Sinister Point Productions, working hot in 2018, my buddy Joel David Reed. You know, special effect. He's a makeup artist. He's built facades and so forth. D&D guy. The guy's like a bard in real life. It's crazy, you know. I guess the bard would be like the musician in the fantasy world or and so forth. So he's like, hey, dude, and he does costuming. He did costuming for the movie industry as well. Nice. And he's like, hey, do you want to go to Ren Fair at Irwindale? I'm like, I never been, dude. So I don't have nothing to wear. He's like, just come over. We'll throw something on you. So I go to his house, his apartment here in Orange County. You walk in and he has like this facade of like a brick and mortar wall in his house and his apartment. It looks like a dungeon. Then he's got a rack of different weapons, prop weapons, and ones that were hollow forged. So they were actually metal, but they weren't solid. They were hollow forged.
Okay.
So he's like, he tells me this. He's all, we're going to be Rus Vikings. I'm like, what are Rus Vikings? He's like, they're Siberian Vikings. So they're less Nordic and they're more derivative, I guess, towards Russia and Siberia. So they're not going to have blue eyes and blonde hair. They're going to be more, you know, dark hair they're going to be brunettes instead of blondes so much. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And I have my beard. So he starts putting all this stuff on me. And then he's like, you know, wear these gloves, put that. And he gives me like this war satchel. And I guess it was like certain emblems that indicated some stuff. Then he gives me these bracers. And for people that know what the bracers are, it's like, it could be like ironclad pieces or leather pieces that go on your forearm, I guess. And he's like, these bracers I made for this movie. And he gives me this headpiece. He's like, this headpiece actually was a piece in a movie I made. And he's like, this brooch is actually a real, like, he was just like naming all this stuff. And he's like, from different movies that he put like on, he put me in certain colors in gold. And this is where the kicker, he put me in certain color golds. Then he's like, hey, this axes are drop forged. They're not solid. You can wear them, Rick. Just don't take them out. You can't. I'm like, okay. So he makes me this 6'7" Viking, and I wear my boots too. Then he gives me this tankard. No, he gave me a horn to drink out of, and I put it in the war satchel belt, and then whatever. And he's like, you know, tuck these gloves in, wear this axe, do this. He's like, just don't take the axe out. I didn't know he put certain colors on me, which made me a Jarl? Am I saying it right?
Jarl.
There we go. So we're walking around the Ren Fair and people are like, make way. And they're parting the crowds and they're bowing to me. And I'm like, what's going on here, dude? He's, oh, the colors that made you, you're like, I guess a form of royalty. Correct me if I'm wrong. Or like entitlement.
Yeah. Jarls were kind of like the, I guess a way to look at it with other types of communities. They'd be like the sheriff or like the mayor. Like they were the head. Leader of the towns.
Well, it didn't help that I'm already 6'4". And then I wore my boots, which have like a 2-inch or 3-inch lift. So I end up being like 6'6", 6'7". And he has all these traditional colors on me. So I'm like, you know, symbolic to, you know, these Rus Vikings. That he looked like kind of like a rogue, kind of a cutthroat, where he just had like daggers hanging off his back. And then he had like a bunch of tankards on him. He had a scarf like hanging from his neck. And he has long hair. So he looks the role. And he's got like the open pirate shirt with all this jewelry. And he looked like something out of like the Prince of Persia, kind of like a Viking or something from, you know, like the Mediterranean. So it's me and it's him. And we look like cutthroats or whatever. You know, I look like I'm some type of like whatever. And so we're walking around. He's like, and he's taking me to all these different encampments. He took me here. He took me there. And then we started drinking and people were giving us, you know, wine and ale and so forth. So I guess that day was Viking Day. Actually, I take that back. We ended up at the Kronenberg Ren Fair.
Yeah.
In Corona, and that day was Viking Day. I had a blast at Irwindale. I got drunk and acted like an idiot. Apparently, I walked into the royal court without not knowing. And here comes this Viking, and these guards are trying to stop me, and I'm like, get out of the way. And I didn't know. And they're like, Rick, you can't go in. This is the royal court. I'm like, I don't know. So there's all these big Victorian people and all refined, and here comes this drunken Viking. I had the horn, and I was drinking out of the horn, and just I was a drunken mess. And then they made the mistake of taking me to the smith, the blacksmith, where they had actually had forged weapons. Mm-hmm. You could pick the weapons, but they were tethered with a chain. There was like flails and like morning stars and like battle axes and like broadswords. I'm like, you brought me to the wrong place. I was like, you know, you've been feeding me alcohol this entire time, right? And so there's a picture of me holding this giant forged, like double-headed axe and like over my head, like I'm Thor or something. So flash forward, I had a blast. So the best part of that, we were leaving and there was a dude like in full on plate and he's passed out, not in his car, sitting outside his car up against the tire in full plate mail. And he has his helm like on his lap and he's completely passed out. And I was like, fuck yeah, Ren Fair, best fucking experience. So Joel texts me. He's like, hey dude, he's like, hey buddy, we're going to go to Ren Fair in Kronenberg where I know everybody. I thought you knew everybody over here. He's like, no, I know everybody over here. Don't worry about it. So we get in for free. It was fun, but it was more of a relaxed vibe, like a big party, and everyone was encamped. Everyone was like there for days. So he takes me to the German camp. No, he takes me to the Basque or French camp, which they stay at a German brothel. And they're just like, hey, if you want to join us, you know, this is what you got to wear. You got to do this. You got to do that. And they gave me red wine. And then I saw, I'm like, what's that across the way? They're like, oh, those are the Spaniards. They're diehard Catholics. I'm like, I'm going to go check it out. I walked in and they kicked me out because I was a Viking. They were like, get out of here, heathen. You know, just they kicked me out. Heretic. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Well, Joel didn't tell me it was Viking Day. So I'm like, hey, there's a lot of Vikings around here. So I'm walking around and there's like a group of Vikings who like beckoning me. They're calling me. They're like, hey, come here, come here. They fed me, gave me food and wine. They're like, hang out with us and asking about my costume. I'm like, hey guys, I didn't do any of this. My buddy Joel put me on this. So what catches my eye is the Knights Templar, and I'm obsessed with them. And I'm like, Joel, is that the Knights Templar? And he's like, yeah, dude, they have their own like tavern here, and they have a cathedral. I'm like, are you serious? So I walk up, and it's a mid-sized cathedral, but the peaked roof, and they have a little tavern, and they're all out there. They're all out there in their chainmail, and then they got their, you know, the symbols of the Templars would wear. And like a little kid, I go up there, I'm like, how do I join? Yeah, like, I was such a nerd. And they're like, come in. And then like, they're all, welcome, my son. And like, and there was like a priest and all that, a cardinal. And they're like, okay, you got to do this, you got to do that. So me and Joel are the two, you know, the two looking, you know, roughnecks hanging out in the tavern with all these knights. And they're feeding us all this alcohol and food. And there was like mermaids everywhere. And just like, there was guys there, the Knights of Gondor were there, like hanging out up front. There was this one group that called, I forget what they're called, but there was just, I had a blast. I was just like a big kid, and I don't know how many turkey legs I ate, but I was like, I got hooked. So I joined the Knights Templar. Unfortunately, haven't had time to do anything because, you know, COVID and all that. But they had intentions of going back to Coronaburg and Corona. And I was like, dude, okay. And Joel's like, I wouldn't get full on chainmail because it's going to weigh too much. You could get pieces of it, sew it into, you know, your whatever, do this, do that. I was going to white out my hair completely, my beard and my hair, and then I was going to do one white contact and have makeup done like if I was wounded. Mm-hmm. Kind of like The Witcher. You know, I was going to do that, and I was so geeked out. I was like, dude, I'm so ready to be a Templar. I'm like, I can't wait to do this. I'm like, yes! And just, it got shut down. So, but technically, I'm still a member of the Knights Templar of Coronaburg, so eventually when they get together, I'm going to do that again, so.
Well, I'll have to have you, I'll have to share with you some of the ones that happen down if you want to come to San Diego. You would love, usually it's in the fall, they do Vista Viking Festival. So it's one that's just dedicated to Vikings.
Sign me up, yes.
Which is a lot of fun. And we know a few of the groups that camp there. And that one is on the smaller side, but it is a ton of fun. And then there's one more inland, there's a Ren Fair in Escondido, California, that's actually pretty fun. Not, and that one's closer, it's not as big as Irwindale at all, because that one's just massive. But the Escondido one's a lot of fun too, and our group usually camps at that event.
I had a blast eating, were they Scottish eggs? I don't remember.
The Scotch eggs.
There we go. Ate a shit ton of those, drank a bunch of ale, and they're like, hey, you want to go, throw hand axes. I'm like, let me get this straight. You feed me a bunch of alcohol. I was like, and you know, I get to throw axes at the stationary targets. And I was like, I had a blast. And they started firing off cannons. And there was a reenactment between, it was like the French and the English, like inside like the, I guess the tournament area, whatever you want to call it. And I was like, Joel, can we go in there? And he's like, Rick, you can't. This is all staged. I'm like, no fair, man. It's like, and they were firing off cannons. And I was like, oh my God. I was like I wanted to go crazy and do everything. He's like, no, Rick, that's like, you have to like train with those guys. I'm like, oh, okay. So I got to throw some hand axes. So that was fun. So
yeah, the fighters do an amazing job, but it's a lot of, especially if you do like more of the full reenactments where they aren't actually choreographed and it's just real fighting. Like those guys meet, it's a definite year-long commitment. And they have to make sure their armor's up to code and check everything before the battles. Because I've seen some pretty gnarly injuries from those events of someone taking a hit too hard. Or one camp had a full-size ballista.
Oh my gosh, don't tell me that. And I'll hijack it, Jesus.
But since obviously you have to like pad the weapons, so it looks like giant Nerf darts just being launched out of this thing. But if you got hit by it square in the chest, like you'd get knocked on your ass.
I saw the pikemen, the guys carrying the pikes, and I wanted to do like an open field tackle when I played college and like take these guys out and grab one of the pikes and the halyards and just attack, you know, the English. And I'm like, Joel, that's so cool. What can we do? They're like, Rick, you have to be part of that group. I'm like, man, you're no fun. I was like, come on. I was like, you're gonna feed me alcohol and they're firing cannons and weapons. I'm like, come on, no fun. So anyways, but another thing we have a common interest in is D&D, Dungeons and Dragons. So what can you tell me about that? Like, what characters do you play normally? Like, what's your to-go-to is like, as far as, your character class and race and build, what do you normally do?
Man, we've done it for so long. There's been so many campaigns.
What's your most memorable or most recent one you can think of? Or your favorite, memorable favorite, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I know. God, I think I was an elf wizard in one of our first ones. Uh-huh. I just remember because every time I actually hit, you got the good old magic missiles.
Oh my God.
Spell.
It's like an instant hit every time. There's like a million of them. It's like just insane.
Yeah. Stupid. Yeah, that one was fun. I know I'm spacing because we had a campaign going on right before COVID hit because we've never tried it online. Our group, we would try to set up a get together once a month and meet up at the house. Mm-hmm. So we'd have like, we had the whole mat laid out. We had all our miniatures and we'd have the all.
Yeah. In person, it's just so much better, but I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fun. Cause if one or too many people like couldn't make it, then we'd all still get together and we have a collection of different tabletop games. So we'd just make it a tabletop board game day if we couldn't play D&D. But I'm spacing on my last character. I know it was a tiefling.
Okay.
But I can't remember what I was. I know I was more of like a... I think I was more of a hunter-archer type of person. Because we would joke that I'm basically like Demon Legolas. Because my character is stupid. Like I very seldomly missed anything.
Right.
And I would end up doing in like a single roll, being able to shoot like at least... 4 or 5 shots at once.
When I first met the girlfriend, she saw my Instagram profile. It said D&D, and she thought it was Dunkin' Donuts. And she loves Dunkin' Donuts. She's all, "You like Dunkin' Donuts?" I'm like, "I do, but also to play Dungeons and Dragons." So it's like, I stopped playing for years. And I think the last time I played, we're going to geek out. Hopefully people know what we're talking about. Last time I really played was like second edition, like in the 90s, high school. Now like D&D's up to like 5th edition and, you know, and so forth. So what happened was I was going to join the Knights Templar, not Knights Templar, the Medieval Combat League. They do the actual fighting with the Los Angeles Knights, which they practice in Burbank. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, okay, you know, they're like, well, it takes about $6,000 to $8,000 to start with armor and weapon. I'm like, whoa, I just bought a car. I'm like, well, come to practice in Burbank. I'm like, I just bought a sports car and I got to take it all. Nah, I don't know. So the alternative was, you know what, I'm going to start playing D&D. So I think I went on the meetup app to find a group or whatever. And at the time, I lived in the Huntington Beach area, and I found a group. It says HB Gaming. And I'm like, hey, guys, I haven't played in years, this and this and that. They're like, well, we have like an introductory night, kind of like, you know, Youngblood's night and first campaigns and so forth. So, okay, they invite me to, at the time, with the DM, the Dungeon Master, the Game Master, was my buddy Rich. Dude my age, and he has like the man cave in his house. I get there, and it was like a scene out of a movie where like you walk in the wrong place and the music stop. Everyone looks at me and they're like, I'm probably like in a horror t-shirt, you know, like my tattoo showing, and like it's all these nerds, and they're all, are you the pizza guy? I'm like, no, dude, I'm Rick. I'm here to play Dungeons and Dragons with the guy. They're like, and they all kind of looked at each other and like, yeah, okay, pull up a chair. And I had no idea how to build a character again, and it's like, this was 2017, I think. Now I'm like 2 years in deep playing a different camp. Oh, now I have various characters. Like I'm playing like the character I'm playing now, you know, we're totally geeking out of this. He is a dwarven cleric of the light. He follows like the light domain. Like his god is Helm, and he's supposed to be this dude, you know, do-gooder, and he has like a shady past. And then, you know, I have a paladin, half-orc paladin, and then I have just all these other characters now, and it's just, you know, I had the dice and the book started stacking up. I'm like, when did I become a Dungeons and Dragons nerd again? And all these profiles I follow on Instagram. And I turned my friend Emmanuel into Dungeons and Dragons. And the dude does voices. That's what I love. He's like, hello. You know, just like when we do like the stuff during the end. He's like, you bastard, I'm going to kill you. And I'm just, and he does like the British accents. And he gets all elaborate and detailed. But we were able to figure out how to do it online. I was against playing online, and you have like, was it like a Roll20, Fantasy Grounds, and there's another platform you can play online. But
yeah,
like I said earlier, it just, I was hesitant when we started playing, but it makes it easier because it does all the math for you and everything, or It adds the effects, like the spell modifiers or the strength modifiers, the saving throws and so forth. Again, you guys probably don't have no idea what I'm talking about, so, but oh well, we're geeking out on our stuff, so.
Sorry, guys.
Oh well.
No, it's, I know the campaign we were on, we were kind of close to an end anyway, so I think that's partly why we were like, we'll wait till we can all get together again. But I've never DM'd my own campaign. I feel like it's too much. One of my closest friends, Kaylin, though, he's the one who really got us all into it, and he is a phenomenal storyteller, and he's even, when I got married, I asked him to write our ceremony because he's just good at what he does. But he always made some of the best characters or storylines and super well thought out worlds. And you mentioning you playing a cleric made me think of one of the characters I did have fun with. We totally just did a very non-serious campaign, but it ended up being like a very evil campaign. We were just a band of assholes. So we kind of made our own characters, and instead of being a regular cleric, I was an anti-cleric. So I was basically just an evil asshole, and my character's background was like, I was raised by this super spiteful, like, or this super harsh sun religion. I forget the name of what type of religion it was, but my character was like in this very brainwashed cult-like religion that was supposed to be for good, though.
Right.
And my character just went absolutely nuts and went to the dark. And one of my character flaws was anytime I saw one of the churches or monuments dedicated to the religion that I escaped, I couldn't help but burn it. So anytime we were trying to like stealth into a certain area, the DM knew it because they'd be like, oh, you see the symbol of so-and-so, and everyone's like, oh, shit.
She's going like,
to burn this church down. Damn it.
Yeah,
That one was fun, though, because usually a lot of us are on the more neutral side, but I think that time we were like, you know what, let's do an evil campaign and just be a bunch of giant assholes, and it
pricks.
Was a lot of fun.
Yeah, my dwarf has an issue with pretty much every other race besides a dwarf, so I'm playing a very traditional, like, well, dwarves, they don't like anyone shorter than them, so it's pretty much the halfling and the gnomes, and he picks on them all the time, and it backfires on him, so he's supposed to be, you know, the servant of the temple, but he's kind of an asshole sometimes, so anyways, people are like, what the hell are they talking about? There's some D&D nerds out there, just admit it.
Yep.
Okay, so where can we find your artwork again?
So you can find it online at teresamccobb.bigcartel.com, which is linked on my Instagram as well, which is also Teresa McCobb. And for in-person events, I'm currently just starting to branch out for doing art things online. So in Oceanside, California, there's a shop called Ikigai Artifacts that does like different artist themed pop-ups once a month. So I've
cool,
and he tries to do them once a month on Saturday, and there's a bunch of really awesome different type of art and vendors there, so I do it there. There's a shop in Escondido called Daydream that actually a week from today I'll be doing they do Friday night art pop-ups, so doing those there. And hopefully as things start opening up again, I'm going to be aiming next to try to look at some of the more Halloween horror themed ones.
Nice.
More in your neck of the woods.
Nice. They're right here. I'm telling you, there's a bunch of them. That'd be cool.
Yeah,
to see
San
that.
Diego doesn't really have much as far as the horror Halloween spectrum. So I know I'm going to be definitely making some drives up to Orange County and the LA area to do more events up there, hopefully.
We're definitely looking forward to it. So any other future plans?
Other than that, besides the art stuff, I know Sanctum of Horror is planning on opening up again this year, and we're gonna still have our two big mazes. We are bringing back Lights Out.
Nice.
So if anyone feels like making the trek to Mesa, Arizona, I assure you it is a fun, creepy time. And that is usually running end of September through October.
Nice. Definitely looking forward to that. I'll put their Instagram, the link in the description of the podcast.
Perfect.
Okay. So what I normally do And for those that listen, they know what I'm about to do. So I try to end every episode with a fantasy question. And it can be any scenario, your preference, your choice. I just kind of paint a portrait, and it's for you to just decipher what you want to do.
Yeah.
So a time portal opens up there in your apartment right behind you. And it's a movie, and what you see is a movie set. And what it is, it's any movie set you could go on to and work on part of the special effects team, or you're actually in charge of the special effects team, or a certain special effect artist approaches you and asks you to be part of this team. What movie would it be and why? Or what special effect makeup artist? It's your choice.
That's so freaking hard. You do have good ones that you throw on here, because I knew this was going to come and I had no idea what it was going to be.
That's why I kind of keep that secretive until the very end, just kind of like catch you off guard.
No, that's a good one, because it's like, oh man, what? I mean, obviously makeup wise, it would be a dream to work with Rick Baker.
Okay.
Hands down. But the real challenge is, what freaking movie?
Well, it could be multiples. Or you guys are doing live casts, you're doing prosthetics, or it could be something like, hey, something you guys are working on together now. It could be anything. It's your fantasy.
Dream world. That's so hard. Well, if it was the fantasy world to work on an existing film, obviously what we talked about already, I would have loved to be on the crew that worked on that transformation, since it still freaking holds to this day.
Exactly.
I would have loved to seen that. Man, just some of his zombie makeups he does, like, that's part of what I love from that cheesy, the Disney Haunted Mansion.
Right.
He did a lot of the zombie designs on that. Really? I love the way he does zombie makeup. So to do a zombie thing with him would be fun. I don't know, anything with, if I could just be his assistant for anything, have him teach me his ways, like, that would really be the biggest dream come true.
Let's say you guys worked at his personal studio for the weekend and just absorbed all this knowledge and just taught you his effects and his signature looks or whatever, or just his skill set.
One thing that would be fun if I had that, let's see, God, it's so hard because there's so many cool things you could do. It'd be fun to do kind of messed up creatures, like, I know you mentioned The Witcher earlier. I don't know if you played that video game.
Yeah.
Or read the books. Like, doing some of the creature designs from that bestiary would be sick.
That'd be cool.
I love all the hags in that.
Yeah, you guys.
Again, I keep going to gross. I love being a gross old hag. It's just in my nature.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be any of his movies. It could be him. Let's say you could grab Rick Baker from 1985 and bring him to 2021 and work on something. It could be whatever.
It'd probably end up being some creepy, messed up, dark folklore kind of film. Like, I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I loved The Witch film. And I do like when people take stories from traditional folklore and just go to town with letting... I like the proper mix of where you use enough effects where it gets you, but then I also like films that kind of leave it to your imagination, because I feel like sometimes that messes with you even more. Because I know if you have a super... imaginative brain, like, I think that's one of the things, like the original Haunting film, when I first saw that, you never saw the ghost.
It left it to your imagination.
But you'd see like the doors pushing open or like bending out and stuff, and you're like, oh shit, what is that behind there? Like, I don't know, I could go nuts. I had a million ideas of but it'd be fun to see putting one of my character designs into like a full-fledged kind of story, but it would take a lot of fleshing out, and it would definitely be something on the dark folklore span for sure.
Cool.
Because that kind of ties in both my loves.
Well, it's your fantasy. You could do whatever you want. So
yeah,
there you go. That was a good one. I like that. You kind of threw me a curveball. I'm like, wow, she did her homework. I was like, damn you. No, just kidding.
Which is good, because I usually suck getting questions on the spot. I usually freeze up.
Well, you definitely knew it was coming, so there you go. Well, Teresa, I think that's a wrap. This is very, very fun. Yeah, it was good seeing you again. You know, it's through Zoom. Through the internet.
I know. We definitely have to meet up in person soon.
We're going to definitely have to do some spooky business or just hang out or whatever. You know, this is going to be a good year for the haunt industry and for artists and scare actors and just people in general. So I want to thank you for coming on the podcast and making time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I appreciate your creepy artwork, even though it gives me the willies. And just thank you for being a friend. Thank you for allowing me to break character when I first saw you guys and make you guys laugh as well, too. Oh, great. That's great.
Hey, you pulled it off still.
I did.
You were good.
I did. It is what it is. Oh, well. So once again, this is episode 16 with Teresa McCobb, special effect makeup artist and scare actor from the Sanctum of Horror in Mesa, Arizona. You do your own makeup, which is crazy. You're an illustrator. You're an artist. People can find your artwork as well online. I just want to thank Zombie Donuts for sponsoring the podcast. I want to thank everyone at home for listening, you know, home, work, and their car, and so forth. But more importantly, I want to thank you, my guests, making the time to come on and being a good friend. And I think that's a wrap. All right, guys. Have a good one. Take care.
You've once again barely escaped the clutches of the Creepcast with Rick Creeper. Next time, you may not be so lucky. To find out more about the Creepcast and Rick Creeper, follow Rick on Instagram at RickCreeper11. Until next time, be sure to keep that lantern light burning. You never know what could be lurking out there in the dark.